Hi there, this is Chris Welter from the Center for Community Voices at public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio. You're about to hear a podcast version of our weekly audio documentary show called Think Twice. In this episode, you'll hear a conversation about the Freedom Summer Project of 1964, a movement to get Black people registered to vote in Mississippi. On its 60th anniversary, Think Twice host and Community Voices producer Dave Barber interviews two people about Freedom Summer, Kevin Magruder and Steve Schwerner. Stay with us.
Freedom Summer attracted volunteers from around the country, many of them college students, who after receiving training in Oxford, Ohio, went south to register voters in Mississippi. Two organizations you will hear mentioned are crucial to this story and are often referred to using their initials. SNCC, which stands for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality. Dr. Kevin Magruder is Associate Professor of History at Antioch College. He has vast experience in the realm of community development. Among his published works are Race and Real Estate, Conflict and Cooperation in Harlem. He also produces Loud as the Rolling Sea, a radio series on WYSO that presents the stories of Black people's everyday lives, past and present, in Yellow Springs. I began by asking Kevin to frame the mission of Freedom Summer.
Freedom Summer was a next stage activity. So the March on Washington happened in August of 1963. And historically now we view it as the high point in civil rights movement. But when we use that term, it's really more, it's almost like civil rights theater. Its purpose was to show then President Kennedy that there was support for civil rights legislation. And it did that. It accomplished that goal. About 2 weeks later, the bombing at Birmingham 16th Street Baptist Church happens on a Sunday morning when four little girls were killed. And that, I think for many people, was a reality check that they came out with such a good feeling about the accomplishment of over 200,000 people coming to Washington. Also, people were beginning to say, well, we need to make sure that Black people are involved in the voting process in the area where all of these problems are happening. My family is from, my father grew up outside of Birmingham, Fairfield, Alabama. And so, like, he was already living in Toledo by the time this is happening. My grandmother was there, and I've talked with her about that period. And so for people like them, the March on Washington was definitely important. But in terms of their participation in the political process, that didn't really change that. So Freedom Summer, this focus on voting, there's also a thread where Bobby Kennedy, as Attorney General, is pushing Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and others to shift from in the streets to voting rights. I would say those interests intersect. He has that interest, but a lot of Black people did too. So SNCC, with their style of movement building, they really were community organizers. And so they understood they had to be in a place, understand what people want, identify the leaders, and help them lead.
A quick note. Magruder is about to mention Robert Moses, one of the Black leaders of SNCC and a main organizer of the Southern Freedom Movement.
As they and CORE, the Congress on Racial Equality, decide on this Freedom Summer initiative, happens in the summer of 64, but its preparation is happening long before that. And Robert Moses and others are in Mississippi. They're focusing on Mississippi because it had the reputation of being one of the worst places in the South for racial violence, oppression. And I suspect they were saying, well, if we can show that we can make progress here, then other places will either move along or we will get more allies as well. And so they're there months before that summer, talking with people, meeting with people, and they are returning to that same point that full citizenship has to include the right to vote.
10 years ago, here at Antioch College, you took students on the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. You took a group of students down to Mississippi. Tell me a bit about that excursion.
We heard about it from David Goodman, who was on the Board of Trustees of Antioch at that time, and his brother was among the three, Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney, three Freedom Summer volunteers who, even before the initiative begins, they disappeared and then their bodies were found. And so David has continued to stay involved with issues of social justice. And so he told us about this, about a five-day-long conference in Jackson, Mississippi, on the campus of Tougaloo. And we decided to put a course together. And the conference was not just a looking back kind of conference. They did some of that. Robert Moses and Charlie Cobb and other people, a lot of the key figures were there. And some of them I wasn't particularly familiar with until that time. And they did talk about what they accomplished, but other two-thirds of the conference was, what do these tactics mean today in terms of organizing? What are the issues? What can we do? They had a particular interest in college students being there, and so there were a lot of students from other colleges. And part of their interest was, what skills can those students bring to this movement in terms of social media? There were kind of roundtable discussions where you have these, you know, people who we know their names in books. They're sitting with college students, asking them questions, and it's a real discussion. It wasn't a talking heads kind of situation. Robert Moses is really well known for being thoughtful, but also, you know, probably what they call leading from behind, that he identified people to lead and help them do that. But part of the reason why he's not as well known is because his style was, like, you don't get the major speeches from him. That's not what his role was. His style of organizing was to provide people with the support and skills. And the idea was, you're going to be here when we're gone, and you can do this, and you will be fully prepared. And that's not how a lot of the civil rights actions, that some were successful, but they didn't necessarily do that. So Freedom Summer, you have several hundred predominantly white students coming from the North primarily for the summer, and then they go back home. But you had activists who Robert Moses and others had been working with who lived in Mississippi. That's why James Cheney was with Goodman and Schwerner. He was from Mississippi. And so there were other people like him 50 years later were at this conference. And one element that we all picked up, and I think the white students in particular, it was enlightening, was particular way that some of the white volunteers in their reminiscences centered themselves in the whole thing. And the black volunteers who lived there, I felt there was some resentment around that. And also that, yes, those volunteers, they weren't, that's why we're talking about Freedom Summer, because they were there. But that was one of the purposes, was use the Northerners to shine the light on Mississippi in a way that if it was just a Mississippi-based black event, it's unlikely that the media would have followed it. So that did happen. But those black people remained in Mississippi and continued to work, and white people went back home. It was a lesson for all of us to think about, to what extent are we acknowledging the grassroots and the enduring nature of that, too, because they don't get written about in the history books. By the 70s, you have a black elected class of people in Mississippi, and a lot of them most likely come out of that movement. And so their continuing to work on things. So, if, you know, in terms of Jackson, Mississippi now, they've had a lot of problems with their water system and things like that. But that's, you know, it's kind of a legacy of activism that they're trying to push back. And if you look at the white power structure in that area, they're trying to take away their power. And so these issues are not all in the past, this power imbalance, but the fact that they had a large group of people there who understood organizing work, had some successes, I'm sure helped them recruit the next generation to continue to do that work. And so that's something that the people who went back home, they might have done that in their own homes, but they didn't do that in Mississippi. And so that was left to those volunteers who were from there.
When you're teaching this history, how do you frame it with what has happened over the past decade and what's happening today?
I mean, there's a saying that history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it often rhymes. I've written about this in the Columbus Dispatch, I think, and it was a guest essay looking at our moment and comparing it to the post-Reconstruction moment. Reconstruction, 1865 to 1877, you get black citizenship, black voting, two black senators from Mississippi, a black governor in Louisiana. You get about a dozen black congressmen. And if you're living in that moment, it really does look like we're moving to align our practices with our vision as a country. And then you get the backlash framed as people who are redeeming America or recovering what was lost. And what was lost was white supremacy. That's when you get the racial violence. Ku Klux Klan is in the middle of that. They're there right in 1866. By the 1880s, you get Jim Crow, the civil rights movement. That's why there was a need for one, because it was addressing that. And so it's sobering to think about that what we're in now has some elements of that period, in part because it took about 80 years to overturn that. And this is where I hope what was coming out of that conference and others, even the movement for Black Lives. So that movement, which it started with Trayvon Martin, 2014 was the beginning of its acceleration. So for our class that summer, we started in July. John Crawford III was killed in Beaver Creek in August. And some of our students in that class, it was community engagement, and our students had different projects they needed to work on. And some of them got active with the Ohio Students Association, which was doing organizing related to anti-racism, Black Lives Matter. And so it was a period of the possibility of dismantling the vestiges of anti-racism. And then we get to today, which we're living in the backlash now, where it's a really skilled campaign that has redefined words that were used by anti-racists. So critical race theory has been distorted, what that means. But that word has been redefined as something terrible and unfair, and state legislatures across the country are requiring public colleges and universities to dismantle their departments. And that's happened. I'm hopeful on is that the organizing techniques that have been developed, both what we were talking about at Freedom Summer, the Movement for Black Lives, and others, will be able to counter that.
That was Antioch College Associate Professor of History, Dr. Kevin Magruder. A longtime jazz music host on WYSO, Steve Schwerner is an Antioch College alum, former dean of students, and professor at the college. He has dedicated most of his adult life to educating students about issues relating to social justice. Steve's brother Michael, or Mickey Schwerner, along with Andrew Goodman and James Chaney, was one of three civil rights workers murdered by white supremacists at the start of Freedom Summer. I spoke to Steve by phone from the home he shares with his wife Nancy in Brooklyn. I started by asking him about the work Mickey and Mickey's wife Rita were doing prior to the start of what became known as Freedom Summer.
All four of us, Nancy and I and Mickey and Rita, were all involved in the civil rights movement. I started Antioch in 60 with our first demonstration I went to, and then we moved back to New York, and that the four of us were involved in a variety of things. Mickey was much braver than I was, and he actually laid down in front of a couple of bulldozers at the Rutgers housing projects. I would not do that. After the church bombing in Birmingham, Mickey and Rita decided they needed to go down south to go to Mississippi, which was considered the tip of the iceberg, or the inside of the iceberg of segregation. And that Freedom Summer was being talked about, and it was really the two main organizations that were part of it were SNCC and CORE, and that there were five congressional districts in Mississippi at the time, and four of them SNCC was responsible for, and one of them CORE was responsible for. And that Mickey and Rita went to SNCC and asked the volunteer to go to Mississippi, and SNCC wouldn't take them because they thought a white married couple was too risky. When they went to CORE, which we had been members of for a number of years, and CORE said okay, and CORE was responsible for the 5th Congressional District, which included Meridian and Philadelphia, and that they, in January of 64, they went to Meridian and organized what was called the Freedom School. And Rita was mainly responsible for the Freedom School and building the library and teaching adolescents and adults, and that Mickey was an organizer. And Jim Chaney became, who was a local Meridian citizen, became a member of CORE and joined Mickey and Rita and working around the Freedom House. Mickey got arrested a number of times, but there was nothing dangerous. We later found out, of course, that the state of Mississippi had a squad that surveyed and watched every move they made. So they were doing voter registration, and the whole purpose of the movement in Mississippi in 64 was really voter registration. The argument is, if you can register enough people to vote, since many of the counties were majority black, they would have some real political strength. And since they couldn't register anybody, or almost anybody, that's why they set up the Freedom Democratic Party and went to the convention in Atlantic City in August of 64 to challenge the regular Democratic Party.
Can you describe what took place at a Freedom School?
Well, they find a place. Typically, most of the Freedom Schools were in buildings owned by somebody who was a local African American, and the school would be a little schoolhouse, a couple of rooms, typically with classrooms and a library. We spent a lot of time, Nancy and I and my parents, gathering books as fast as we could and shipping them down to Meridian to help build the library. And the object of the Freedom Schools were to teach African-American history to black kids and to teach literacy to people who are eligible to vote and teach them how to what the voting requirements were in the state of or in the county that they were in. And it was always dangerous work. They were harassed, as I said, arrested. It was not a comfortable place to be.
So 60 years out from Freedom Summer, clearly hard-fought ground that was gained during the Southern Freedom Movement is being rescinded, and democracy appears under assault. How do you see it?
Well, I think it is under assault, and I think it's been under assault for a while. It's since the major blow was the Supreme Court eviscerating most of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which essentially reinstituted segregation in a lot of Southern politics. But I think this, it's a mixed bag, because as I heard one person said, if you don't think we've made any progress since 1964, it just means that you weren't around then. integration, whether pro or con, is pretty much accepted in the United States at this point, where it was definitely not accepted in 64, and that people fight against it, but it used to be that people were fighting for it, and it's a big, I think, a big difference. I think we have a long way to go. Mississippi, for instance, in 64, had no members of the state legislature who were African-American, and now there are probably more black folks as representatives in the state of Mississippi than any other state in the union, so that there's been major political progress. There just hasn't been very much economic progress. Disparity in wages and wealth between people of color and white people in the United States remains very, very great. It's the frontier that we have to work for.
Two books I went back to before I talked to you and Kevin were the Taylor Branch History, Pillar of Fire, and Charlie Cobb's memoir, This Nonviolence Stuff Will Get You Killed. Both of those books capture the pervasive atmosphere of white supremacy in the South in the mid-1960s. 60 years later, it appears that the notion of white supremacy is on the rise.
Well, I think that's true. I think more and more people are talking about it, and we've recently had a president who supported it. In Charlottesville, there were good people on both sides, he said, of that demonstration. Of course, one side was run by the Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party, so there weren't very good people in the judgment of some. I think that Trump is his presidency has helped give rise to more acceptance in segregation and more acceptance in discrimination. And there's still, but there are people, especially young people, who are fighting against it. You can point to good pieces of progress and a great deal of loss. We have a long way to go.
That was activist, academic, and former WYSO music host Steve Schwerner. Special thanks to Michael Gino for recording that interview from the Schwerner's apartment in Brooklyn.
You just heard an episode of Think Twice with Dave Barber, an audio documentary show on public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Subscribe to Think Twice wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.